Welcome to Catholic Review Radio. This is Chris Gunty. We have a special episode this week to talk about movies, Hollywood, and the Oscars. Spoiler alert, we may be discussing key plot points in some of the films. You have been warned. Our guest co-host today is Ann Augerton, who is the managing editor of the Arlington Catholic Herald and editor of the Catholic Journalist, the newspaper of the Catholic Media Association. Full disclosure, Ann is also my wife. But our guests today are some very special guests. Sister Rose Picotti, FSP, is a media literacy education specialist and the founding director of the Pauline Center for Media Studies in Los Angeles. She's an author and a film journalist, and she's been working lately in Rome, teaching classes on digital media and media literacy. Our other guest is John Mulderig, who is the movie film reviewer for OSV News. John has been doing this since 2007 in one guise or another, first with the U.S. Bishop's Office of Film and Broadcasting, then with Catholic News Service for a very brief time with the Catholic Review, and now with OSV News. John, Sister Rose, and thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. Good to be here.
Thank you.
Ann, why don't you start us off?
I don't know what you all want to start with. Do you want to start with talking about Best Picture, or do you want to talk about the movies that you've seen this past year? And so there might be some overlap.
There's a little bit of an overlap, yeah. I haven't seen that many, but I just saw a couple this afternoon. And I think I've seen my first porn movie that's been nominated for an Academy Award.
Anora. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, that is one we have not seen.
I the whole way through, I was thinking, if only Sister Rose could spare herself viewing this.
Oh my.
But you know what I did? After 15 minutes, I said, this is not going to change. I've noticed that if things don't get better after 15 minutes, it's not going to get better. And in fact, it doesn't. It's not, it's hard to have, you have a sympathetic feeling for the young woman, Anora, the title character, but she's in such a situation of really of dwelling in a land of lost human dignity and hope that it's very hard to come out of it. And the only thing she has going for herself is her body. And she's a smart woman. Anyway, I have to, just in full disclosure, I didn't watch it all the way through. I skipped ahead to see what was going to happen. And I'd watch it for a few minutes. And if it was okay, I stayed with it, but it didn't stay okay for very long. And then I would move ahead. Because afterwards I said, I think this is the first Academy Award or nomination porn movie. It's more than soft porn. Would you, John, did you see it?
Yeah, I was completely shocked, I have to say. And I see a lot of very edgy movies. I've seen a lot of edgy movies over the years, but this was by far. And in addition to so many scenes of graphic sexual activity and so forth and nudity, also, I think it may have broken the Wolf of Wall Street's record for the F-bomb, which, I did something I've never done before. I stopped writing the F-word because normally I write down each and every use of it. When I got to about 60 uses of it, I stopped.
See, that's like me. At a certain point, it's not going to stop.
Yeah, no. And what was, what I found interesting was, in a certain sense, it veers from being pornographic to being boring, because they go off in search of the male lead who is scared of his parents, so he runs off. And they have this long trek all through Coney Island trying to find him. And it's sort of, at some level, it's mildly funny because they keep having these misadventures. But overall, there's just no interest in the film. So it goes from being excessively graphic to being boring.
Well, how does a movie like this get nominated for Best Picture? If it's not very good, if it's not very well done, and if it's just so laced with profanity?
Well, I think her performance is a powerful one within the context of the movie, but the artistic choices made by the director are just not at all in keeping with any kind of decency. But I think at the same time, people want to be edgy. They want to be, ooh, look what, we're nominating a movie that years ago never would have been nominated. That kind of thing is always a possibility.
I agree with that her performance was good, but it was that plunge into just a lack of dignity that really complete loss of dignity and hope. At the end, maybe there was a little bit of hope, but it was done in such a degrading way that I was going, why? Why? Why even make this? Why don't we move right from here into Emilia Perez? I had to see that because it's getting so many awards and so much talk about it. It's hard to know what to say. It's a dark movie. It's about a guy who, is transgenders. I guess on some level he felt that he was a woman, but on another level it's completely manipulative about so he doesn't get himself killed. He's a drug lord. It's a sad, tragic movie with music.
John, what was, did you see that one?
I did, and I would say probably the phrase I would use is morally complex, because it isn't exactly a ringing endorsement of, oh, he transformed and therefore all is well. On the contrary, it's a more or less tragic story. And the complexity comes from the fact that he can't surrender the good things about his previous life. And so I thought that was a far more interesting movie than Anora. And I think the artistic choices that were made were much better. It certainly kept my interest. Now, it's not a movie for, mom and pop and the kids and the popcorn, but I thought it was an interesting movie, but very downbeat, as Sister says, pretty grim.
Did you think it fell into a lot of stereotypes about Mexicans, or the cartel and the drug? I heard some chat about that the Mexican audience wasn't pleased with it because of that, the stereotypes. And I went, well, at this point, with the drugs coming out of Mexico and the cartels, and for decades now, I'm not sure what's stereotype and what isn't.
That's interesting, because certainly at the center of it is a total breaking up of a stereotype, which is, the Mexican drug lord who thinks nothing of killing people but wants to be a woman is sort of a, of all the people in the world wanting to have that change, she would be
Not the macho
the
guy.
macho man, right? So.
That does sound morally complex.
And yet there were some, unlike Anora, there were some touching scenes in it. Like, he's become a woman and he's reconnected with his kids, and his son says that this woman who is ostensibly his aunt smells like his father,
Yeah.
and he sings a little song about what his dad smelled like. So there were, with Anora I felt no emotional connection to any of the characters. With Emilia Perez there are moments that are fairly touching.
And just to be fair, the music was pretty good. I mean, it's just really hard to think of a musical in that context. The music was good, and it might win for, well, I don't know what it's going to win. I can't read the mind of the Academy. But moving on from that, since we're sexuality anyway, we should talk about Conclave.
Yes.
So this was one that we saw. And of course, this is a film about the election of a pope. And there are twists at the end. I think I'm sure most of our listeners have heard that by the end, the one of the cardinals who was at the conclave is elected. And it turns out that he had gone to have some surgery and apparently has both female and male gender. So the question is, did the church just elect the first intersex person?
Intersect.
Yeah. Again, one of these very dark movies. I thought most of the time it was very dark. Isabella Rossellini is nominated for Best Supporting Actress, and she doesn't have a speaking line in the first half of the film. So it's kind of an odd kind of thing there. What's your take on this one? John, let's start with you.
Well, as purely in cinematic terms, I would say it's a very well-made film, but it's typical of the experience of people making movies about the church who don't know a great deal about the church. And I think the positions of the various cardinals are sort of, oh, let's have this one be a liberal, this one's a conservative, this one's from Africa, so he doesn't like gay people. It was all sort of, fill in the paint by numbers kind of thing. But in terms of drama and considered strictly as a piece of cinema, it's a fairly well-made film.
I read the book and I was such a ho-hum, and there's many parts of it that are inaccurate. The author is Protestant, I believe, and I will say it's an earnest book. I think he's striving to be accurate, but even there are inaccuracies in the book. But the portrayal of the sisters is so unreal. The nuns would never get that close in a conclave to the cardinals. And the other thing is, John, tell me if I got it right. Did he break the seal of confession?
Oh, that's interesting.
I think he did.
Okay.
And the sister I saw it with, she's studying at the Gregorian for her doctorate. She's from Slovakia and she speaks English and German and French and all this. She's very, very well educated. She's watching it and she goes, "This is so absurd."
Yeah. And one of the other points that's been made is that if a cardinal is made in pectore, which is in secret, that the Pope designates somebody a cardinal in secret because they're concerned that they might be threatened with violence in their home country if they are. The cardinal in question is from Afghanistan. If the Pope dies without ever having revealed that, it's null and void.
Exactly.
So this person would not even have been allowed into the conclave.
But he did reveal it to the John, what's his name, character, the really tall guy, third rock guy.
John Lithgow.
Oh, John Lithgow.
Yeah.
Lithgow.
Oh, look.
Yeah. So he did reveal it to him, and I think that, but I don't know if that counts.
I think it has to be publicly announced.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's so many things, and then there's the umbrella scene, the choreographed umbrella scene, which just seemed a little ridiculous to me. It's like us nuns. It's like herding cats. You would never get all those cardinals in one place to do that. We obey, but we kind of do our own thing. Anyway.
Well, how about we switch gears and talk about Wicked?
Ah.
Okay. Sister, you want to jump in? What did you think?
Sure. Well, I was prepared to like it because I'd seen the musical at the Cederstrom Center in Orange County from the nosebleed section. So I hadn't really seen the musical. I had heard it. It's so, you're so far from the characters. It was even hard to get into the story. But having said that, I'm sitting there watching it with another sister because I got a screener from the studio, and we're going, "Oh, Harry Potter. Okay, let's see Barbie." There are all these elements, artistic elements to it that we just kept naming films that it reminded us of. And it was fine, and it's got a lot of messages in it, on the nose messages that I think even a 10-year-old would understand, and about bullying and racism and prejudice, bias, all those things are in there. But if you can hang on for the last 15 minutes, that was amazing. Cinematography, the editing, the music. Oh, I thought that was worth the whole time. To me, it was artistically. And of course, and you have sympathy for the characters. You can engage in well, especially, and I'm not going to be able to pronounce her name. I don't have it in front of me. The actress who plays the Green Witch.
Alphabet.
Cynthia Erivo, right? I had such great sympathy for her character, and she was such a strong, lovely character without being in any way resentful. She treated the Pink Fairy,
Galinda.
Glinda, as she treated her like a sister, but she was like a dumb blonde. I don't know. There were some artistic moments in it that I think could have used a little bit more tidying up, but it was good. I'm glad I watched it. I really want to see the sequel now and see if they can ma match that.
Yeah, you mentioned it being, worth it to wait till the end. It was a very long film. John, was it worth it?
I'm very resistant to long films. I don't think anybody should be allowed 2 hours and 1 minute, much less 2 hours and 40 minutes or whatever it was. But overall, I would have to say that it was very well done. And I thought that the combination of the drama of the Cynthia character, her drama plus the comedy of the ditzy blonde kind of made for a good formula, and it did keep you going. And visually, it was quite good. It's one of the few movies in recent years that I've thought to myself, wow, the sets are really great on this. That's usually a detail I don't pay much attention to be honest. So I would say of the nominees that I've seen, this and Dune Part Two would be the ones that I think 10 years from now, people might still be watching.
Interesting. Okay.
Well, let's segue into Dune then. Dune Part Two, what's your take?
So Dune Part One was fine. It was a good movie. Dune Part Two is way above the first segment. I thought in terms of quality, in terms of how it catches you up into the story, I was really taken with it. It would definitely be my choice for best picture of the ones I've seen.
You know, I saw the first Dune, and I'm probably the only person in the universe that said, "What story?" And all my friends, sci-fi friends and everything, they're going, "Sister Rose, how could you say that? It was fantastic. It was all this." And I'm going, "Yeah, okay." So I haven't really, I'll probably watch the second one on a rainy day when I don't have anything else to do.
There's a huge difference between the two, and I'm not sure what that's attributable to. I don't know whether the first one was all about exposition and now it's rolling.
What a long roll. Can we talk about It Ends With Us?
Sure.
That one's not nominated, though, right?
No, but it's one that okay, so there's so I had to see it because there's so much controversy. And you know, it was such I didn't know about whatever was going on when they were rolling the film out and doing all the promotions for it. I didn't hear about any of that going on at the time because I'm over here in Rome and I wasn't really paying attention. And then when Blake Lively files that lawsuit, it was like, whoa, that was huge. Unfortunately, that's taking away from the movie, which I think it's hard to watch it after you know what the lawsuit is about. But it's still about domestic violence. And I think that's something that we still need to break open and talk about as a church and as people who care about others. And to care, who care about families. And I like the film and I like the way it ends. And I think it had sympathetic characters. But against the context of the world in which the film unfolds out there, unfortunately, this the controversy has drawn away from it from me. But I went and watched it again after the lawsuit. So I did watch it before the lawsuit and then I watched it after the lawsuit. And then it's completely distracts you. From the what the film really is about. What did you think about it, John?
I thought it was an interesting movie. I thought they were clever in doing the ambiguousness of his first assault on her, where it might have been an accident, and so that kept things from becoming obvious. And what you've got to do next is X, because I think that even in these situations, sometimes maybe it is ambiguous, or maybe the victim wants it to be ambiguous so that she doesn't have to commit to, to a drastic course of action. So I thought that was interesting. The wrap up is a little problematic from the perspective of the permanence of marriage, although obviously in an abusive situation, separation is certainly justified, but she finds a happy ending with somebody else, and that's a little bit, in the strictest Catholic terms, that's a little problematic. But no, I thought it was an interesting treatment of the subject. And it's obviously a subject that deserves to be examined at close range.
I did see Heretic. Did you see it, John?
I did.
What did you think?
I thought that was, for the genre, I thought it was pretty intelligent. Because usually it's like, oh, look at that knife going into that, part of that person's body and all the blood coming out. So for a horror film, it was, I thought, pretty literate. I thought it went off the rails at the end in terms of the gore. Not a great movie, but more interesting than many horror films. How about you, sister?
Well, I'm not sure I like Hugh Grant as the bad guy. I mean, you know, we all have our different lenses with which we watch these films. But anyway, yeah, I was trying to, what is it really trying to say about religion? That was, I think, the fundamental question driving the film. And I don't think it came out in a very positive way about what religion is. I think it's trying to show that religion is manipulative and cultic, and not just the Mormons, who are the two young ladies in the film. I think it paints it with a broad brush and a broad stroke. And it's not a feel-good film movie for me.
Yeah, no, by no means. But it made you think in a way that most horror films don't make you think. That's the only thing I would say. In terms of the view of religion, I mean, at one level, Hugh Grant's character is anti-religious, but at the same time, he's also a nut.
Well, there you just said it.
Yeah, it was a bit muddled because you didn't come away with it saying, oh, this is a very clear and interesting message from the movie.
Yeah.
It just raised more issues and rather than solving any of them or giving you a line to hang on to.
Yeah. The other films I saw this year were a lovely, well, it's not a lovely film, but it's a really good film on Netflix called Children of the Train, or Children of the Trains, Bambini del Treno, or del Tre dei Treni. And it's over here in English and Italian, of course, but I don't know if it's on in the States. But it's based on a true story of after World War II in Naples. There were a lot of children being raised by single mothers, and the communists were offering these children like foster homes in the north of Italy, where there were stable homes and where they would be taken care of. And of course, people were screaming that they're, sending them to Russia where they're eating these children and things like that. But this one mother lets her child go, and he thrives. And the family that he's with, the man makes violins. It's got a beautiful story to it, and it's sad, but it's also about a mother's love that's really strong. And so I don't think the film, maybe it'll get nominated for next year, 'cause I'm not sure when it was released.
We'll look for it. That's The Children's Train, Il Treno del Bambini, and it is available on Netflix in the US.
Sister, did you see Cabrini?
Oh, yes, I reviewed Cabrini at length, and it was nominated for a Satellite Award. Satellite Award, which is given by the International Press Academy, which is kind of an organization that grew up to counteract the Golden Globes, because this it's a kind of a popular Golden Globe press people versus serious press people, and they nominated Cabrini for Best Film, and I thought that that would have been lovely if it could have been nominated. The only critique I had of the film is that I wish they'd shown more of the sisters together, because Mother Cabrini didn't do it on her own, and the other sisters are there, but it doesn't show them. I think there's only one shot with one of them smiling, and come on, we laugh a lot. But it's a film completely made by men, so maybe they just couldn't get into the religious life aspect of it. I don't know if they had any consultants who were nuns, but it's not a big criticism. I liked the film. People who saw it liked it, so they were inspired by it. What did you think, John?
Oh, I liked it very much. It did draw the criticism that there wasn't enough about her prayer life. But in fairness, I mean, it's difficult to portray someone's prayer life on screen.
Yeah, that's kind of boring to people.
Exactly.
And yet that certainly would have been what shaped everything that she and the sisters did. I see your point about, that they weren't shown in community very much, and they weren't shown kind of being contemplative at all, but they weren't meant to be cloistered. They were meant to be out in the streets.
Yes.
Right, John?
Yes, I'm sure her prayer life was very rich. You don't become a saint without your prayer life being rich. But as I say, it's difficult to portray that in a compelling way.
All you could do is really hint at it, like showing her maybe praying in chapel, and that would last for the whole
Chapel.
movie.
Yeah. So I sympathized with that. I thought it was an unusually good religious movie, which, it's very easy to make a bad religious movie. And I've seen a lot of them.
Yeah.
This was on the higher end. You're right, John.
And I think the Angel Studio, which is the outfit behind it, I think they're showing some promise of making quality faith-based movies, which would be a breath of fresh air.
Absolutely. You know, especially when they're authentic and still artistic and entertaining, and not in a cheap sense, but see, you could have seen this in the theater and gotten popcorn and still be inspired by it. Do you know what I mean?
Yes, exactly. And the one they did on human trafficking was the same way. Sound of Freedom.
Sound of Freedom. Yes. Yeah, that's the
Yeah.
one. Well, let's move back to a couple of the other just hit. Maybe we won't hit all of the Best Picture noms, but how about A Complete Unknown, the bio of Bob Dylan? Did you see that?
I did not.
Oh, I did. I thought it was very well done. Timothée Chalamet, I think, deserves the nomination for Best Actor because he's virtually in every shot of the movie, and so he's got a quite a heavy lift. I don't know that much about Bob Dylan, but I thought it was a very well-made film.
I have a friend who is a huge Dylan fan and of that whole era of music. And he thought Chalamet was ideal for it, but he said whoever was the casting director really deserves the award for this movie because everybody in it was perfectly cast, according to my friend.
Interesting. Interesting.
So.
Well, I did come to the conclusion that I like Timothée Chalamet's voice a lot more than Bob Dylan's. That's just my taste.
You know, they're saying that there should be an Oscar category for casting directors. I think that's true because if you get a good cast, and even if you have a mediocre film, sometimes you can really bring it off because of the cast.
I'd say that's one of the things that elevates Conclave is the excellence of the actors involved is, maybe they're better than the material they're dealing with in that movie.
All right. Any other Best Picture nominees that we should look at? Or do you want to talk a little bit about just kind of in general about what's going on in Hollywood these days?
So the ones that we've missed are The Brutalist, I'm Still Here, Nickel Boys, and The Substance. Anything to say about
Unfortunately,
any of
those are the
those?
four I haven't seen.
Okay, let's just move on then.
Okay,
Okay.
good. We talked a little bit about the movies that didn't get nominated that you suggested, Sister Rose, Children of the Trains. We talked a little bit about Sound of Freedom and Cabrini. John, anything that didn't get nominated that you would recommend as worth seeing?
That's a good question. I'm not sure that anything stood out for me. I think again, Dune 2 and Wicked are probably the two movies that I think will last. Cabrini is really well done, as we said. So I think that was a good one. The Anthony Hopkins Holocaust movie was interesting. How about you, sister?
The only thing I can think of that I started watching was Society of the Snow. And that was about that's an international film that didn't get nominated, but I don't think. But it was about the crash in the Andes of the rugby team.
Oh,
Right.
Remember the film Alive? It was done live. And but you know when I started watching it, I said, I don't know if I want to go through this again. I did it before. It's the same story, really. What possibly, what can they do differently? But anyway, so I didn't finish seeing it. I also got through halfway through Maria, the Maria Callas story, the opera singer. Did you see that? Did you get to see that, John?
I didn't, unfortunately. I would like to.
But
What did you make of it?
I found it intensely boring.
Oh, okay. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oops.
sorry, now that I think of it, I did see it.
That impressionable.
I'm sorry, Angelina Jolie. I love you,
Yeah,
but
right. Yeah, no, yeah, you were sort of sitting there wondering why am I watching this? Now that I think of it, the sets were good.
Costumes were
Highest
good.
praise.
Paris looked nice, but otherwise it wasn't too great. No. Did you see one of our freelancers saw We Grown Now? I haven't seen it myself.
What is it? What was the name of it?
We Grown Now.
Oh, no.
It's a film about the Cabrini-Green housing. My colleague Kurt Jensen was really taken with it. So,
Chicago.
as
Yeah. Agreed.
yeah. So we put that on our top 10 list because he was really taken with it. But
Another movie about the heritage of Mother Cabrini. So,
there
because
you go.
it was named for her.
That's right.
That it was named for her. What is Hollywood missing these days?
Well, I'm over here in Italy, and so I hear what's in the news. I'm still an accredited journalist, so I'm MPAA certified, Rotten Tomatoes still. But the problem is that there's so much coming out. You have no idea how many films. I think how many hundreds are released every year, but only 200 will make $1 million or more. I think that is still a true statistic. I'm not really sure. I'm watching a lot of television and episodic television, and I'm wondering why they can't make like The Night Manager,
The Night Agent.
The Night Agent. Oh my gosh, I love the first season. And okay, I watched five episodes of the second season, but then I stopped because it was, I said, this is too intense and I'm not really going to like it. I need to pace this out, you know. But I really enjoyed that. And then the other one is Yellowstone. Okay, it finished now. You know, there were parts of it that were too raw and too crusty, if you want, but it was a compelling show. It really got you. And yet they're not, I don't think they're doing that with movies. So how can they take a 6-part or a 10-part series and make it as compelling that we'd want to go to the theater for it?
Right. Yeah, one of the things that we've come across this year is that there have been a few series that we've started watching, and we find we don't like any of the characters. They're all reprehensible for various ways. It's hard to keep watching when you can't root for anybody, isn't it?
Yeah, and you just stop. Yep.
Yeah, because you have to care about somebody on screen, otherwise the movie is just not going to work because you won't become engaged with the story. I would say if I had to identify an area that's lacking, and this has been true for a long time, there are kids' movies and there are grown-up movies. There aren't movies that the whole family can watch together, with a few exceptions, sort of the high-quality Pixar kind of things. They work for everyone. Inside Out 2, particularly Inside Out 1, was, a splendid movie. But it's very hard to find, I would think, a movie that parents can watch with their children and not be bored, because generally everything is segmented into, okay, here's the PG movie with a little bit of, scatological humor, but otherwise it's wholesome. And then there's the grown-up movie where, people are getting blown up or having people shoot them or whatever it is. But there are very few films that parents and children could watch together and be intergenerational. Sort of a Sound of Music kind of thing.
What's funny is that what you fall back into are Hallmark Christmas movies, right?
Yes,
Well,
right. Because you're on safe territory there.
it puts the age level, it says 7+.
There you go.
7+.
Well, I was talking to a business professor at one of our local Catholic universities before Christmas about Christmas movies and why they all seem the same. And he said, well, people don't like to call it a formula, but it's a recipe. And he said, if you follow the recipe, you can be successful. That's why there's so many of them and they're so easy to make. He said, and the fact is, they make money. So.
Yeah, they do.
Well, I will put in a plug for the best Christmas pageant ever, which is exactly what I was talking about. It's a kind of movie that parents and children can enjoy together for the most part, I would think. I have to review my notes on that one to make sure,
No,
but
you can't. You're right, John. I think you're right.
we watched the Fall Guy remake the other day, and I don't think it got nominated for anything, but it was a lot of fun with Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt and cameo by Lee Majors, of course,
Oh.
the original.
Right. I enjoyed that one a
That
lot.
was a fun
And I think
one.
I compared it to the screwball comedies with the, two romantic partners jabbing at each other verbally. And
Yes.
yeah, that was a lot of fun.
And it was interesting there because there was a little side story to it that they were kind of complaining that there isn't an Oscar for stunt people. And so it was
Right.
kind of this whole meta thing about stunt people complaining about there not being awards for stunt people or actors who are playing stunt people complaining that there's no award for stunt people. So it was kind of fun. It was a nice little mindless thing. And on that thing, what's the most fun movie you saw this year?
I would say I enjoyed Fall Guy. I also liked Fly Me to the Moon. I thought that was a lot of fun.
Good. Sister Rose?
Fun. I'm trying to think. Fun.
Yeah,
I think it would have to be Wicked, as far as you don't have to invest too much into it. You can just enjoy it. That would be, because I haven't seen that many. I'm trying to look at the Hallmark movies that came out in 2024. There were 32 new Christmas movies that came out with Hallmark, and
wow.
oh,
that's incredible.
Wow.
But there was one, I posted it on Facebook. I don't think I put it on my blog, but it actually showed a church with a crucifix. It talked about Christ's birthday, and that is not normal for Hallmark Christmas movies. They're not specifically Christmas. They're sentimental, and they're good feel good movies and family movies and maybe reconciliation movies, but they don't really get too specific. But this one was a surprise.
That's a whole nother episode.
We should do that. We should do that. Yeah.
We should.
Because what's funny is I was giving a talk in Missouri. I won't say where, but it was to about 200 Catholic school teachers and religious educators. And I was trying to get them into the media. And I said, so how many of you saw this film that had come out? And it was a good film. Nobody raised their hand. I said, how many of you go to the movies and theaters? Not one person raised their hand.
Wow.
Well, I wasn't getting
Wow.
anything. And I finally said, okay, how many of you watch Hallmark Christmas movies? And everybody's hands went up. I thought it was really. And the men and the women, and then everybody started laughing, and then they got loosened up. I think sometimes people are afraid to say that they went to see such and such a film because they might be criticized for it. But I did say that the room was surrounded by the seal of confession, but it didn't convince them.
Didn't help them.
Okay, let's do one more thing, and we can do it one of two ways. Do you guys want to pick best movie you think is going to win or you think should win? If we do movie, actor, actress, director. And I know the caveat that not everybody's seen everything, but do you want to do what you think will win or what you think should win? Or both?
I'm happy either way, or both.
Let's do both then.
Okay. Of the ones I've seen, I think Dune Part Two is probably the best movie. That and Wicked.
Okay.
So I would not be surprised to see either of them win. I have a feeling maybe Anora is going, that might win just because it's so edgy.
Oh, be terrible.
Oh, okay.
I agree, but.
I would rather have Emilia Perez get it, because
Oh yeah, definitely.
cinematically
Oh.
it has so much more substance. So of the ones that I've seen, I haven't seen enough, so it's really not fair. So Wicked, but I don't think Wicked's going to win Best Picture. It's not put together well enough for Best Picture to me.
Maybe with the fact that Bob Dylan now has a Nobel Prize, maybe it's time for a complete unknown to get the Oscar.
There's also a lot of buzz about The Brutalist. I haven't seen it, so I can't judge that, but that's got a lot of praise.
I can, and it's not available yet on streaming, so I wasn't able to watch The Brutalist beforehand. But I certainly wouldn't mind if A Complete Unknown got it, Wicked, or Dune Part Two, if you say so, John.
You got to see
Okay.
it. It's a whole different ball game from the first one. So,
Okay.
sci-fi is not my thing by any stretch of the imagination. So,
Okay, any picks for best actor? And so just to go over the nominees, Adrien Brody, The Brutalist, Timothée Chalamet in A Complete Unknown, Colman, Domingo, Sing Sing, Ralph Fiennes, Conclave, Sebastian Stan, The Apprentice.
of the ones I've seen, I would go with Timothée Chalamet, but.
I think if Ralph Fiennes got it for Conclave, I wouldn't mind. Has he ever won an Academy Award? I don't know. He's been nominated, but anyway, I think he played the role very well. The movie that's not really great.
And then actress Cynthia Erivo in Wicked, Carla Sofia Gascon, Emilia Perez, Mikey Madison, Anora, Demi Moore, The Substance, and Fernanda Torres, I'm Still Here. Sister, who do you think is going to win?
Oh, I would like Cynthia Erivo to get it in for Wicked because,
Okay.
gosh, she's very powerful.
I'd agree with that. I deal with that.
Okay.
And one of the points, John, for you, I mean, I think we have some interesting things. Sister Rose is in Italy, so she doesn't get all the same releases that we get here in the States. And John, your mandate, essentially your purpose at OSV News, is to review all the stuff that comes out in wide release, whereas some of these that are nominated are ones that would be more art house pictures that would have been released in a much more narrow situation.
Exactly.
One of the things I love about your reviews, John, is when I read them, I think, okay, that's a movie I don't have to see now because John has told me how horrible it is in very explicit terms. So,
Well, that's my joke, is that we see them so you don't have to. I was just going to say, my other line is, because I see all the wide release things, I see the movies where things blow up.
But you know what? I also when I review a movie, I try to break it open and let people decide on their own whether they want to go see it or not. Unless if I was going to do Anora, I would be very specific about that. But you know, of course. But I don't like to. I'll let John do the. You can see the. We see it, so you don't have to. If I do it, I would put. I watch it so we can have a great conversation after and look for human and gospel values or not, if they're not there.
Very good. Well, this has been a fun conversation. Do you have any hopes and dreams for what's going to come out of Hollywood in 2025?
You stop doing remakes, please. Really, where is the creativity? If you're just going to rehash something that was done and probably not do it any better, how many films have we seen? They're very rare when the remake is better than the original. It's really even hard to think of one off the top of my head.
I mean, the only one I would put forward would be maybe West Side Story. I think he was incredibly daring to remake it, and it paid off. But normally, I mean, I think the underlying formula there is it's become so expensive to make a movie that you have to pitch the fact that it was popular in some other form, and now you're going to remake it. So it's a proven property already, in order to get people to invest the amount of money it's going to cost to make the movie.
Which is why they keep making Exorcist movies and Devil movies. It's a proven formula and it works. They're money makers.
What are you looking forward to this year, John?
Hollywood was thrown for a loop by both the pandemic and the strikes. So it's back on an even keel, I think. So maybe we can look forward to some creativity. I just hope the creativity doesn't go down the line of Anora, where it's how can we make what should be an X-rated movie into a wide release film?
Good point.
Who wrote Anne of Green Gables?
Lucy Maud Montgomery.
Laud Maud Montgomery. Oh, yeah.
Do you know that? No, Lucy Maud Montgomery wrote many books, and there's one called The Blue Castle. I wish they would make that into a movie. There are lots of books that can be made into great movies because the stories are so interesting. So there's some really good. There's good books still out there that can be mined for compelling stories.
We can look forward to seeing that.
Well, one thing I would say is I'm going to keep my eye on Angel Studio because so far they've got a pretty good track record of doing what's very difficult, which is making quality religious films. So we'll see if that continues.
We'll look forward to it. Well, we have been having a conversation today with Sister Rose Pacati, a daughter of St. Paul, who's based in Rome these days, and with John Mulderig, the film reviewer for OSV News. Our guest co-host has been Ann Augerton of the Arlington Catholic Herald. Thank you so much for all of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you guys. This was great.
This is Chris Gunty of the Catholic Review, and you've been listening to Catholic Review Radio.